Good evening, truth seekers. Hey, welcome to this corner of Thursday evening. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around for a while. We have a veritable smorgasbord of topics for you tonight. Also, a little bit later in the program, we will be taking more than the usual number of phone calls as we slowly but certainly work the bugs out of our phone system. I think everything fixed now? I think everybody can hear everybody? Good. We'll see a little bit later tonight. Also, don't forget, Monday. MikeMalloy.com. Check it out. All the information you have been emailing about will be on the website. How to subscribe to the podcast, how to do this, how to do that. Streaming will be available there. All sorts of stuff. All right? MikeMalloy.com. Monday. The first two items on our rundown for this evening are kind of linked. Here's the first one. This comes from the Associated Press. Boston Latin School. It's a prestigious college prep school in, oddly enough, Boston. There were rumors that spread through the school in the past few days that vampires were strolling the campus of Boston Latin School. The headmistress or the headmaster of that school, Lynn Mooney Tetta, sent a notice out today to faculty, students, and parents denying the presence of vampires. She declined to offer details about how the rumors got started. Boston police spokesman Eddie Crispin told the Associated Press that police were called to the school yesterday after hearing of the vampire tales. Police spokesman Crispin said he didn't know if the alleged vampires were among the student body or hiding in old corners of the building. Now, Boston Latin is, it doesn't predate Yale, or is it Harvard? But Boston Latin was founded in 1635. Its students have included Ben Franklin, Sam Adams, not the beer manufacturer, Louis Farrakhan, and Sumner Redstone. Vampires at Boston Latin. Nobody's saying anything. The headmaster, the police, nothing there. Bloodsuckers at Boston Latin. Now, we'll assume that the vampires there, possibly nothing more than a school prank, maybe just somebody who did too much of the wrong kind of hallucinogenic the other night, or maybe a group of people did. But let's write it off to fantasy. This is not fantasy. Most of the people listening to this program are familiar with PNAC, Project for a New American Century, a group that was put together in, 1997. And its sole purpose, it was put together mostly by neoconservatives, whose sole purpose was to engage the United States in as many wars and as much destruction as they possibly could in order to satisfy two things, the military-industrial complex in this country and the strengthening of the Likud party in Israel that wants to see just about every Arab country in the Middle East either wiped out or rendered absolutely incapable of even talking about not going along with Israel's plans for the Middle East. Okay? I think we pretty much are clear on that. That's one of the reasons that Israel is the only country in the Middle East that has a rather substantial nuclear arsenal. If the Arabs ever do jump, boom. That's the end of that movie. Well, a new organization that is being newly formed, that is built on the same model as PNAC, Project for New American Century, only worse, and by some of the same people. Not too many people have heard about this yet. Certainly the mainstream media is either ignoring it or, for the usual reasons, let's not say anything to piss off the power. Oh. Or they don't know about it. I don't know. I know about it, so they should know about it. But it was PNAC that put into motion that foreign policy that really turned into a cancer on this country and the rest of the world under the Bush administration. And there's still thousands of people slated yet to die because of the theories laid out by PNAC and the wars that Bush got us into. There are going to be many more deaths of American soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq as this thing plays out. There is no reason for these soldiers to die. There is no reason for any more PTSD men and women coming home completely destroyed mentally. There's no more reason for arms and legs to be blown off of 20-something young people from the United States or any other country that goes to Afghanistan to do what? But still, it's going to happen. Because Barack Obama is going along with the plan. Now, this new organization is named the Foreign Policy Initiative.
Well, golly, that could be just about anything. FPI, the Foreign Policy Initiative. Is that about a foreign policy that says, let's bring health care to people all over the earth that can't afford it? No. Is that a foreign policy that says, let's adopt Gandhian or the policies of Martin Luther King Jr. to bring peace and nonviolent resistance to a fascistic regime? No.
Foreign Policy Initiative. Is it about feeding people? No. What's it about? It's about war, death, and destruction. And apparently it's the brainchild of the sick son of a bitch, William Kristol. Here he is again. Here he is again. One of the founders of PNAC. The former, how long did he last? A year at the New York Times as a right-wing columnist. Here he is, William Kristol, neocon without parallel. Now, along with Kristol is Robert Kagan, another neocon who believes that the world must die in order to secure the security of Israel. That's what Kagan's about. Now, I don't care if you call it anti-Semitic. I don't give a goddamn, okay? That's where these people are coming from, period, especially Kagan. Who else is involved here? Former Bush administration official Dan Senor, who I believe is married to Campbell Brown, who is on what? NBC? MSNBC? So don't look for any really good coverage on that network, right? Now, the only activity at this point from FPI, Foreign Policy Initiative, has been to sponsor a conference that's coming up at the end of this month, I believe in Washington, that is pushing for a U.S. surge in Afghanistan. Now, we know what that means. Apparently, Barack Obama has already signed on. These people want more. Now, not one of these cowardly rat bastards would take up a weapon. What about you, Dan Senor? You're a nice young man. Put on a Kevlar vest and a helmet and pick up a rifle and get your ass over there and go kill some towel heads. Why don't you do that, huh? Why don't you do that, Dan? None of these guys are going to do it, but they're pushing for a surge in Afghanistan. More death, more blood, more destruction, more endless war, more decapitated souls and broken bodies. That's what these bastards want. That was Kagan and Kristol, who are the brain children, if you can call it that, the brain trust of the PNAC, Project for the New American Century. And it was that organization that got its fame and fortune from leading the charge to oust Saddam Hussein, both before and after the attacks of September 11th. They didn't give a goddamn. The attacks, this is the group that made it clear that what the United States needed was another Pearl Harbor. And then, oddly enough, one occurred. Isn't that serendipitous? Wasn't that, what's the other word? Not serendipity, but kismet. Isn't that just wonderful? All right, a little bit more on this when we come back. Foreign Policy Initiative, FPI. Ain't no doubt about it, baby. It's you, I, and me. I'm wrestling with a lion.
Oh, you baby, I'm good. Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malone.
I'm gonna leave the city, got to get away.
21 past the hour. So, you know, the hellish part of being politically aware in this country is that for some reason we have to repeat the same stuff over and over and over again. We just don't learn. This organization, FPI, ought to be, we ought to get the address and show up in front of this place with huge canisters of some type of insect fumigant and go in and stop this before it starts. It is put together by the same people that gave us PNAC that tried to destabilize the entire world. It's called Foreign Policy Initiative. PNAC's charter members, let's go back to PNAC for a minute. Their charter members included the swine and the scum under Bush that took us to wars and death and destruction. Cheney was there, Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, all of these bastards. Now, FPI was put together earlier this year. There is no media attention so far, except from Interpress Service, which has put this out today. Daniel Luban and Jim Loeb, who are trying to get the word out to anyone who will pay a little bit of attention. The organization's website lists Kagan, Crystal, and Senor, who came to prominence as a spokesman for the occupation authorities in Iraq. Remember that guy, Dan Senor? Creepy-looking little dude, a little bald dude who was a spokesman for our what do I want to call them? Our substitute dictators before we had, quote, elections, end quote, in Iraq. And you notice I said we had. But Dan Senor was a spokesman for the Coalition Provisional Authority, CPA. And he used to hold these daily press conferences that, or not, maybe not daily, but the slimy little son of a bitch, I mean, just watching him, you'd expect when he left the room there would be a trail of ooze from, you know, from where he moved across the room. But it was horrifying. So these guys now have started it again. Only FPI, the illegitimate offspring of PNAC, FPI intends to make confrontation with China and Russia the centerpiece of its foreign policy stance. How about that? China and Russia. These sons of bitches want to commit suicide. Look, boys, I tell you what. I will be happy to provide for you six or seven of my nice, well-taken-care-of firearms. And why don't you guys just get together in your office and blow your goddamn brains out and leave the rest of the world alone? You want the U.S. to adopt a confrontational stance with China and Russia. Are you out of your minds? Yes, you are. Let me assist you. I will give you my weapon. Well, I'll loan them to you. And you can kill each other. Please do that. There are hundreds of thousands of people on Earth, buried, burned, who are dead because of what you guys put together in 1997. How much death do you want? Please, kill yourselves. Will you please just commit suicide? The rest of the world does not need this. You people apparently do. I'll give them to you. I've got a Glock 9. I have a 38 Spanish revolver. I've got a couple of rifles. I have... Jesus, why am I saying all this on the air? I'll be happy to give them to you. Form a circle. Take careful aim. Fire. Please. They want to take China... They want to confront China and Russia. Now, this goes back, way back, to when William Crystal's filthy rag, the Weekly Standard, took the lead in attacking the Clinton administration for its alleged appeasement of Beijing. Appeasement! Here's a nation that owns everything, and are trying to get along. It's called appeasement. Son of a bitch, these people make me sick. Now, according to Daniel Luban and Jim Loeb, for its formal coming out, FPI, Foreign Policy Initiative, has chosen to push for escalating the U.S. military effort in Afghanistan. That's where they're going to start. More death, more destruction in Afghanistan. The organization's first event will be held in Washington, D.C., March 31st. When is that? Next week. It'll be a conference entitled Afghanistan, Planning for Success. The lead speaker, Senator John McCain. Now, if you'll remember, if you'll remember, because I don't give a damn, but McCain in February gave a speech to the neocon American Enterprise Institute arguing that the U.S. could not afford to scale back its military commitment in Afghanistan, and McCain, during that speech, called for a redoubled effort to, quote, win the war in Afghanistan. There's more of this. You need to know this. It's called Foreign Policy Initiative, and they want as much death and destruction and dismemberment and chaos as they can possibly get. You know why? Because out of that comes the kind of fascism that these filthy bloodsuckers lust after.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Twenty-five before the hour. Yeah, this one really has me pissed off. Most of what happens these days, if you focus on it for longer than 5 minutes, you're going to get angry. But for the same group of fascists, anti-American fascists who have been in such positions of power in this country and abusing that power by leading this country into wars, by leading this country into situations that have caused the bankruptcy of this country. These people are traitors to a higher degree even than the dumbass George W. Bush. I'm talking about William Kristol and Robert Kagan and just Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and Cheney, all these people who launched PNAC. And as a result of that launch, tens of thousands of people are dead in the Middle East, Americans, Iraqis, Israelis, Palestinians, just slaughtered, just blood on the ground, just nothing. While these filthy, oh my God, I'm telling you, I get enraged. I get enraged about people like this. I get fearful of what I would do if I ever just accidentally got on the same subway as one of these people, or the same airplane, or the same cab. I don't know what the hell I would do if I saw these people face to face, knowing what they've done and what they feel they have license to do and what they're starting again. Foreign Policy Initiative. They want to provoke China and or Russia into a nuclear confrontation. That's what their goal is. This is what they're about. They want to destroy everything. Everything. Now, how do they gain? I have no idea, except they are psychos. Every one of these people are clinically mad. They are insane. So now they have the Foreign Policy Initiative. They're going to have their first get-together, March 31st in D.C., a conference called Afghanistan, Planning for Success. They're pushing for a so-called surge of American forces in Afghanistan. Apparently, President Barack Obama has signed on to this madness. Mr. Obama, this is not why we voted for you! Other speakers at this first event will include another one of the swine from American Enterprise Institute. Happens to be Robert Kagan's brother, Frederick. He was one of the key proponents of the surge strategy in Iraq. Also, someone named Lieutenant Colonel John Nagel, the new director of something called Center for a New American Security. Jesus Christ, does that sound like a fascist organization, doesn't it? Center for a New American Security. Do these people not realize that there is no longer anything that can be described as security left for any nation on earth? Are they so sunk into their madness that they don't understand that the word security has become a meaningless collection of letters? Show me, tell me, demonstrate to me any place on this planet where someone can say, I am totally secure from an attack or an onslaught, be it bacteriological, a viral, a nuclear, biochemical, weather-related. These places don't exist. This is Earth 2009. It is run by madmen. This is where we are. So they put together something called Center for a New American Security. What is that for? It gives them all jobs. It gives them a chance to milk the terminally brain dead for as much money as they can get. We're going to stop the communists. But I digress. The point here is this FPI, Foreign Policy Initiative, the spawn of PNAC. Now, also, someone involved in this, going to be a speaker, is California Democratic Representative Jane Harman? If you live in California, could you please write your member of Congress, send her an email, and ask her what in the hell she's doing going to... Well, you must like her or you wouldn't re-elect her over and over again, right? The director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation, that's the group of good guys, a guy there named Steve Clemens, says... This reminds me of the Project for New American Century. Like PNAC, it will become a watering hole for those who want to see an ever larger U.S. military machine and those who divide the world between those who side with right and might and those who are evil or would appease evil as they perceive it. PNAC's membership? It was a who's who of neocons and, at the time, future Bush administration hawks. In addition to Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, charter members included Jeb Bush, who was at the time considered more likely to be the presidential candidate than his older brother, Irving Lewis Scooter Libby, Cheney's chief of staff, who left the administration after being indicted for perjury, Elliot Abrams, an indicted killer from the Iran-Contra years, and he became Bush's top Middle East aide at the National Security Council. I mean, I believe in hiring convicted felons after they've served their time. What the hell did Elliot Abrams serve? I think he got pardoned. Now, in PNAC, the PNAC, their June 1997 statement of principle called for, quote, a Reaganite policy of military strength and moral clarity. Oh, my God. That entailed increasing defense spending significantly and challenging regimes hostile to our interests and values. Challenging regimes! And in January 1998, PNAC published that open letter to Clinton calling for the removal of Saddam Hussein's regime from power by military force. And that letter was signed by people like Rumsfeld and Abrams and Wolfowitz and Armitage and John Bolton. And when Clinton refused magically right around that same period of time, all of a sudden, well, there's Monica Lewinsky and taped phone calls between her and what was the bitch's name? The other one? Linda the Trip. Gee, Bill, just think. If you just would have invaded Iraq, those little cassette tapes never would have been made public, right? A few days after the 9/11 attacks in 2001, another PNAC letter called on President Bush to broaden the scope of the so-called war on terror beyond those immediately responsible for the attacks to include Iraq and Lebanon. They also wanted the United States to invade Iran. They also wanted the United States to go after Yasser Arafat and murder him. This is what PNAC was all about. PNAC no longer exists. Now we have FPI. And as Jim Loeb writes on his blog, the formation of FPI may be a sign that its founders, whose names I just shared with you, hope once again to incubate a more aggressive foreign policy during their exile from the White House in preparation for the next time they return to political power. Now, I don't know if you knew about this. I certainly didn't until I got this today. Thanks to people like Daniel Luban and Jim Loeb for getting this out, Interpress Service. Now you know. Foreign Policy Initiative. They're going to have a meeting March 31st in Washington, D.C. And I misspoke. Campbell Brown is with CNN, and she is Dan Senor's wife. So don't expect really acerbic or clarifying coverage of Foreign Policy Initiative on CNN. Because also we have Wolf Blitzer there, who is Mossad. Has been, always has been, always will be. Just like there's no such thing as an ex-Marine, there's no such thing as an ex-member of the Israeli secret police or secret service, whatever you want to call it. And as Reg writes, Mike, in all the years that Crystal appeared on mainstream media news networks, he was never identified as the founder or even as a member of PNAC. I never heard anyone anywhere outside of the informative internet sources even mention the Project for New American Century or identify the members who were appointed to high-powered positions in the Bush administration. The Weekly Standard was never identified as the mouthpiece for PNAC. And this new organization will never be connected to the warmongers who designed the so-called Bush Doctrine. It was not a great wonder that Sarah Palin had no clue about that policy, the Bush Doctrine. Reg.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Yeah, Patty went to Foreign Policy Initiative website to get the schedule for this event, March 31st in Washington, D.C. And on the speaker's page, right out there on the Internet, Patty cut and pasted it for me, 10:45. In the morning, the subject, Afghanistan, the view from the House. Speaker, Congresswoman Jane Harman, Chair, Intelligence Subcommittee, House Committee on Homeland Security. I didn't realize that Jane Harman was, don't laugh. I can't research all this stuff. You people in California probably know about her, but I didn't realize that she was an incipient fascist. I had no idea. Bias on my part, stupid bias. I've got to learn, because when I see a D behind somebody's name, I don't necessarily think they're progressive or have the best interests of America at heart, but I usually give them the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise. All right. Proof. On Harmon. I know her connections to the weapons industry. I've been aware of that. But she's going to speak at this nest of neocons who want yet more bloodshed? Is that what Jane Harmon wants? If you live in her district, why don't you call to her office in California tomorrow and ask? Is this what you want, Jane? Do you want more death, more destruction, more dead Americans, more Americans coming home with half their brains shot off or their minds completely warped from the horror of combat? Is this what you want? Why are we in Afghanistan? God damn it, will somebody please put forth a coherent, rational, logical reason why we're in Afghanistan? I know, that sounds very stupid. There is no coherent, rational, logical reason for any war. But let's just focus on that one. Why are we there? Why are we there? When were we attacked by Afghanistan? When? Somebody tell me, please. You all have heard of the Pulitzer Prize-winning political cartoonist Pat Oliphant. Well, according to two leading U.S. Jewish watchdog groups, it says here on CNN, Pat Oliphant is being denounced as being hideously anti-Semitic. Well, at least his cartoon is. I don't know if you saw this, it was published yesterday in newspapers and on the internet. The cartoon shows the small figure of a woman labeled Gaza, carrying a child. She is being pursued by a headless, jackbooted figure, enormous. If you look at the cartoon, the woman labeled Gaza, the one carrying the baby, is very tiny, and the headless, jackbooted figure carrying a sword, marching in an apparent goose step, and pushing a fanged Jewish Star of David on a wheel toward her. That's what the cartoon is. The ADL said the cartoon used, quote, Nazi-like imagery, unquote, and, quote, a hateful evocation of the Star of David, end quote. The cartoonist? The cartoonist did this? After the reports that are coming out about what the Israeli Defense Forces did in Gaza, the ADL and the Simon Wiesenthal Center have the absolute temerity to suggest that the cartoonist is using Nazi-like imagery? That the cartoonist is providing a hateful evocation of the Star of David? This is insane. This is madness. This is madness. Members of the Israeli Defense Forces are going public. They're going public in Israel's publications, Haaretz, Ma'ariv, talking about the atrocities that they were ordered to commit. Not that some renegade patrol or platoon committed, but atrocities they were ordered to commit by their commanders. And these rat bastards, the Anti-Defamation League and the Simon Wiesenthal Center, have the nerve to say it is the cartoonist who is defiling the Star of David. It is the cartoonist who is using Nazi-like imagery. Yes, Mike, it is. Abraham Foxman, the ADL's national director in this country, said the cartoon's, quote, outlandish and offensive use of the Star of David in combination with Nazi-like imagery is hideously anti-Semitic, end quote. He went on to say, quote, it employs Nazi imagery by portraying Israel as a jackbooted, goose-stepping, headless apparition. The implication is of an Israel policy without a head or a heart. Israel's defense defensive military operation to protect the lives of its men, women, and children are being continuously bombarded by Hamas rocket attacks and has been turned on its head to show the victims as heartless, headless aggressors. Oh, please! But you see, this never stops. George Galloway, member of parliament from the UK, denied entry into Canada to speak. Who kept him out? The Canadian government? No. The Canadian equivalent of the ADL. Astonishing. The Wiesenthal Center issued a statement yesterday. It urged the New York Times website and other websites to remove the cartoon. It's just madness, isn't it? Oh, by the way, the atrocities committed by the Israeli Defense Forces made it to ABC News tonight. When was the invasion of Gaza? When did that occur? A couple of months ago? Charlie Gibson tonight had it as one of his stories, the atrocities as reported by members of the IDF. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Yeah, I just about lost my supper when I saw Charlie Gibson on ABC News addressing the charge of war crimes that is being leveled against the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, by members of the IDF themselves. And I think it's a clear indication when we talk about the foreign policies of Israel being atrocious and Nazi-like and fascist and murderous, which they are. You know, I don't so much anymore because I think most of the people who used to write to me and call me an anti-Semite just got bored with the whole project and moved on to something else. You don't want to listen to this program anyway. There's too much truth for you to handle. But it's a clear indication that people in Israel don't want this any more than people in America don't and didn't want what Bush was doing in Iraq. I mean, it's very simple. And for anyone to charge that because someone is Jewish, they support the policies of Israel in its genocidal moves against the Palestinians, that is just that's a wrong. That is anti-Semitism. That's like asking somebody you know in your office who might be African American, hey, what do you black people think? And the guy will stand there and go, Jesus Christ, not again. You know, this idea that the Jews are responsible, this is not the case. And I don't know why I have to pause here and say this, but I do. I really do. You know, the Anti-Defamation League in this country is about defamation. And to point out that the policies of a militaristic government are criminal, that constitute war crimes, that involves the slaughter, the indiscriminate slaughter of innocent people, that is not defaming them. That is pointing out the goddamn truth. So, Mr. Foxman, you and your ADL can kiss my ass. This is not anti-defamation. And as far as the Simon Wiesenthal Center, you people of all the people, you should know You're Nazi hunters. You spent 60 years tracking down these murderous bastards. Now you are going to do the same thing? It's an outrage. It's an outrage. It's an outrage. Nobody listens. Nobody cares. Even when members of the Israeli Defense Forces. The way ABC reported it tonight, very hedged, very, very cautious in what they were saying. But the ABC correspondent in Tel Aviv filed the report, so, you know, give them a gold star for that, so to speak. No pun intended there, but you understand what I'm saying. And what the reporter indicated was that one or two or three members of the IDF are taking testimony. They're gathering evidence from other soldiers who were ordered to slaughter people. You know, you can be an Israeli, an American, a Russian, a member of the Chinese military. You know, and if your commander says, you see the women and children over there trying to run from the bullets, kill them. You see the family huddled in the back room of the house, drop white phosphorus on them. You know, it doesn't make any difference what your nationality is. When you get an order like that, you know you are committing a crime against humanity. You know that if you're a believer, and you do that in the superstitious religious stuff, if you're a believer, you know you have just made a pact with whatever your concept of the devil is, if you follow that order. And there are members of the IDF, and there are thousands of members, my understanding anyway, of members of the IDF who understand goddamn well what happened, what the testimony was at Nuremberg. Because it was their people being burned and gassed and executed and slaughtered. And the idea, well, I was just following orders, doesn't wash. A crime is a crime. But leave it to people like Abraham Foxman to blend, to blur the line between Judaism and crimes against humanity by a government such as that is now being put together by Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on the record as saying, yes, there's more war coming. Just like in this country, the new PNAC, Foreign Policy Initiative, they're saying the same thing. Yeah, there's more war coming. Why is it that nobody speaks out about this? Except a few sites on the internet. And so many of those sites on the internet are either staffed by, owned by, or run by members of the Jewish faith, and they speak out against this. I cannot get my head around this. So now the attack is against Pulitzer Prize-winning political cartoonist Pat Oliphant because of what the ADL is labeling as a hideously anti-Semitic cartoon that simply states in the method and manner of a political cartoonist exactly what happened in Gaza. There is not a millimeter of deviation from the truth of what happened. But you're not supposed to talk about it, you see. You're supposed to remain silent. Isn't this what the Jews of Germany and the rest of Europe screamed against in protest? Silence equaled death. Wasn't it the silence of the rest of the world as 6 million were exterminated? Isn't that what never again means? Never again to be silent? So now why is this imposition of silence being laid out there by the very people who said never again? How can this be? How can this be? Oh, never mind. Seriously, never mind. Never mind. One more bit about this. Keith Woods, who's the dean of faculty at the Poynter Institute, a journalism school in St. Pete, Florida, was asked to comment on the reaction to the cartoon. He was asked whether or not the cartoon was improper and at what point in the editorial process an editor can say a product has gone too far. Keith Woods, Dean of Faculty, Journalism School in St. Pete, says he understands the position of Jewish groups and Israeli policy critics. He understands the positions that Jewish groups and Israeli policy critics bring to the table. He said he believes Pat Oliphant is saying that, quote, Israel is behaving toward the Palestinians the way the Nazis behaved toward the Jews, and that he is stating an opinion shared by many in the Middle East and around the world. Mr. Woods went on to say, I believe that like the caricatures they are, editorial cartoons by their nature exaggerate their message, so I don't think Oliphant is suggesting a one-to-one comparison. So I get the message instead that Israel is acting brutally toward the Palestinians, end quote. He also believes that the ADL and the Wiesenthal Center, quote, are saying that the cartoon is at least doing unintentional harm, if not more calculated harm, end quote. He goes on to say, I see their point. There are symbols, and the Nazi extermination of the Jews is surely one of them, that can only truly be analogized to their equals. Unadulterated evil compared with unadulterated evil. Israel's ongoing battles with its Arab neighbors may be many things, but it is not the final solution. End quote. Yeah, once again, the same feeling. Why bring it up? Except, I think about that, and I think to myself, well, because there are innocent people. If I had been doing talk radio in 1941 and 42 and 43, I would have been screaming and foaming at the mouth about the treatment of the Jews. But I wasn't there then. I'm here now, so I will continue to scream about the treatment of the Palestinians. It is that simple.
Good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 22 past the hour. Can you bring that up a little louder? Okay, 22 past the hour. Our economics correspondent, Prairie 2, writes in tonight, the subject line is Freddy Krueger Incorporated will no longer be catering teen slumber parties. Sometimes his titles are as good as the body of what he wrote. Well, not quite, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway, here's what Prairie 2 has to say tonight. Treasury Secretary Geithner went before Congress again today outlining more regulations that the Obama administration wants to be able to bring to the masters. That the Obama administration wants in order to bring the masters of the universe under control. They want broad powers to take over and liquidate any of these bloated parasites that threaten to bring down the banking system. Before 1981, commercial lending was almost exclusively the domain of closely regulated banks, as it had been since the last time the Republicans had nearly destroyed the country under Hoover. Now, fully two-thirds of this big dollar lending is done completely outside the scope of bank regulators. Obama wants transparency, at least to the SEC, in the activities of large hedge funds, venture capitalists, and private equity firms who have literally been running amok. They need to all fly the Jolly Roger so that they can be distinguished from the merchant vessels. He wants regulation of credit default swaps and derivatives, but not an outright ban. Restricting them to legal behavior would be pretty much the same as a ban for most of them. Whether or not this broad agenda of regulation makes it through Congress and is successfully implemented will determine if we are going to get out of the log flume toward the buzzsaw fascism. As far as Geithner just being another Wall Street insider greasing the skids, which is another logging reference, it doesn't seem to be so. The Obama administration wouldn't need to work this hard to just hand the country over. Bush was able to do it without spending any time on it at all. The fact that they are having real difficulty staffing the top jobs at Treasury suggests that they're serious. The Bush transition in 2001 literally used lobbyists like Jack Abramoff to handle the hiring of department and agency administrators. A busload would come over from K Street, were handed axes, and told to go at it. Like Freddy Krueger catering teen slumber parties. And you can read as much of Prairie 2 as you like and argue with him if you like. Go to Prairie 2, numeral 2, prairie2.com and have at it. I have yet to find anything to argue with him about. Which may speak more of, you know, my point of view than his. I think he's a damn good writer, and he's able, like Bridget and Bob, Prairie 2 is able to put together coherent thoughts in a way that makes sense to me. And I figure if they make sense to me, they'll make sense to you, because you know, I found usually over the course of my life that most of what I like is what everybody else likes. You know, I'm not out there on either end where it concerns you know, art or music or literature or writing. You know, just what most people like seems to be what I like too. I am just completely a member of the herd, if you will, and very damn happy to be here. After the break coming up, we're going to have a moment with Bob. So stick around. This is a good one. This is, well, they're all good, but we haven't had a moment with Bob for a while, so stick around for that. And we are going to get to phone calls coming up also. A story caught my eye right before showtime. Fish in the United States. Fish caught near wastewater treatment plants serving five major U.S. cities have residues of pharmaceuticals in them, including medicines used to treat high cholesterol, allergies, high blood pressure, bipolar disorder, and depression. In the fish that people are eating, oh my God. Now, this is not news. I realize it's not news. The researchers found trace concentrations of seven drugs and two soap scent chemicals in fish at all of these sites they tested. They were in Chicago, Dallas, Phoenix, Philadelphia, and Orlando. For comparison, they also tested fish from New Mexico's pristine Gila River wilderness area. It just doesn't stop, does it?
is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour, and it is time once again for A Moment with Bob. I just get fascinated by the music. It's like George Bush when they would hold a shiny object in front of his eyes. Welcome once again to A Moment with Bob. The latest in episode, a series of episodes put together by Bob Alexander, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's Moment with Bob is entitled, What More Evidence Do We Need? Part 2. And the subtitle is, My Favorite Lie. Hey, Mike, the Center for Public Integrity lists on their website 935 lies told by Bush, Cheney, Rice, and Rumsfeld during the run-up to the war in Iraq. If I have to pick one lie out of that stinking pile as a favorite, I'd pick the one I'm going to tell you about because it's a lie that contained other lies. It's the lie that proved to me that we really were going to do it. We were really going to make war against a country that didn't do anything to us and was incapable of defending itself. And regardless of the millions of people worldwide who protested it, war, bloody war, would happen in Iraq. On September 7th, 2002, Bush met with Tony Blair at Camp David. After a three-hour meeting, they came out to talk to the zombie news poodles. Blair. The point I would like to emphasize to you is that the threat from Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, potentially nuclear weapons capability, that threat is real. We only need to look at the report from the International Atomic Energy Agency this morning showing what has been going on at the former nuclear weapons sites to realize that. Then Bush called on a reporter. AP lady. Question. Mr. President, can you tell us what conclusive evidence of any nuclear new evidence you have of nuclear weapons capabilities of Saddam Hussein? Bush. Well, we just heard the Prime Minister talk about the new report. I would remind you that when the inspectors first went into Iraq and were finally denied access, a report came out of the atomic, the IAEA, that they were 6 months away from developing a weapon. I don't know what more evidence we need. End quote. Here are the reasons why this is my favorite lie. It's a twofer. First, Blair lied, and then Bush picked it up and tacked on more lies. And Bush's delivery was perfect. Later, when he'd lie about weapons of mass destruction, yellow cake from Niger, and smoking guns and mushroom clouds, his delivery was awful. He always read those lines like a high school drama student struggling through Hamlet. His pauses for dramatic effect, the emphasis on certain words, were stilted, forced, and fake. He'd obviously over-rehearsed, and his delivery and timing fell flat. But when he said, I don't know what more evidence we need, he was in full strut Bush mode. With a shrug of his shoulders, outstretched hands, and a smirk, he said, I don't know what more evidence we need. Like if we didn't believe this, we were as dumb as a bag of hammers. And the zombie news poodle corps went back to Zombie News Central and broadcast that load of crap to everybody who owned a television set. I watched it along with millions of other nervous Americans. 2 days later, it was completely debunked all over the Internet. The report wasn't from the International Atomic Energy Agency. Let's look at the Washington Post in 2003, almost 1 year later. Here's what it said. There was no new IAEA report. Blair appeared to be referring to news reports describing curiosity at the nuclear agency about repairs at sites of Iraq's former nuclear program. Bush cast as present evidence the contents of a report from 1996, updated in 1998 and 1999. In those accounts, the IAEA described the history of an Iraqi nuclear weapons program that arms inspectors had systematically destroyed. A White House spokesman later acknowledged that Bush, quote, was imprecise, end quote, on his source, but stood by the crux of his charge. The spokesman said, U.S. intelligence, not the IAEA, had given Bush his information. That, too, was garbled at best, the Washington Post continues. U.S. intelligence reports had only one scenario for an Iraqi bomb in 6 months to a year, premised on Iraq's immediate acquisition of enough plutonium or enriched uranium from a foreign source. That is just about the same thing as saying that if Iraq gets a bomb, it will have a bomb, said a U.S. intelligence analyst who covers the subject. We had no evidence for it. End quote. Washington Post. The IAEA did issue a report in 1998, but the report made no such assertion. Mark Gwozdecki, head of the group, told Reuters, quote, based on all credible information today, the IAEA has found no indication of Iraq having achieved its program goal of producing nuclear weapons or of Iraq having retained a physical capability for the production of weapons, usable nuclear material, or having clandestinely obtained such material, end quote. Asked why Bush referred to an apparently imaginary document, the White House claimed he was really talking about a report from 1991. But Gwozdecki told Reuters no paper to that effect was issued by the IAEA in 1991 either. So, the real report said Iraq had been 6 months to 2 years away from nuclear capability before the 1991 Gulf War. And arms inspectors had destroyed the Iraqi nuclear weapons program. George W. Bush made a completely uncorroborated case for preemptive war. The lie was debunked on the net 2 days later, but it took 3 weeks for a newspaper to refute it. Not the New York Times, not the Washington Post, but the Mooney-owned Washington Times. And they buried the story on page 16. Though the lie was spread on the nightly news, it was never contested. Not one highly paid news anchor looked into the cameras and told the American public that the president's evidence for preemptive war was bogus. That's when I knew we were going to have war, bloody war. Some have written that the American media failed the country. No, they didn't. They collaborated with the Bush regime. Bush shrugged his shoulders, held out his hand, smirked, and said, I don't know what more evidence we need. And that's the question we now put to the Attorney General of the United States, the Attorneys General from every state, to federal prosecutors, state's attorneys, and county prosecutors. What more evidence do we need? Bush lied. When will any investigation begin? When will a special grand jury be impaneled? Stay tuned, because this is America, where anything can happen. For example, 41 years ago, William Calley, a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army, led the slaughter of 500 innocent Vietnamese civilians. Calley was tried, convicted, and sentenced to life imprisonment at hard labor. 79% of Americans polled disagreed with Calley's verdict. One day after Calley was sentenced, Richard Nixon ordered him transferred from prison to house arrest at Fort Benning. The Secretary of the Army, in a separate clemency action, commuted confinement to 10 years. Ultimately, William Calley, a convicted American war criminal, served a sentence of 3.5 years under house arrest. Bernie Madoff, on the other hand, stole money. He could get 150 years. We can only stand in awe in the face of American justice. Or shock. Same thing. Regards, Bob. Another episode of A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. You know, it's just one more example of what I say on this program, and anyone with a brain can certainly understand that there is nothing ever, at any time, under any circumstances, spoken by a Republican operative or elected official that is even in the same county as the truth. There seems to be a requirement to be a Republican. You either have to be an expert at telling lies, or you have to be an expert in believing the lies you are told. It's not difficult to become a believer in the lies you are told. All you have to do is nothing. Just sit quietly and listen. Whether it is to the head, from the head of the Republican Party, Rush Limbaugh, or an absolute genius common man, Joe the Plumber, or an up-and-coming star in the Republican Party, be it Piyush Jindal or Sarah Palin. Just sit quietly and do nothing. And that makes you a good Republican.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Coming back after the break, the top of the hour, we're going to take your phone calls. So if you want to get along online now, the answer are... okay, calm down. Calm down. Take a breath, Malloy. This is called radio. Try English. Okay. Phone number here is 877-99-MALLOY. Christine Bowman, writing at BuzzFlash, pointed out something that I completely missed. I did not see the 60 Minutes interview of President Obama by Steve Croft of 60 Minutes. And Christine Bowman points out something very interesting. Croft asked the President of the United States Sunday, when he was on 60 Minutes, quote, "Are you punch drunk?" That's what Steve Croft asked the President of the United States. And as Christine writes, "Did any mainstream, corporate-paid, serious journalist ever ask President Bush that kind of insolent question? Only rarely did any journalist even come back at Bush with a challenging follow-up question, and only the bravest comic in the land dared to insult the grudge-holding, loyalty-obsessed George W. Bush to his face." That would have been Stephen Colbert. Christine goes on, "We are willing to concede that President Obama has adopted a more casual style than that of his predecessor. By executing a charm offensive on the network interview and talk shows, he opened himself up to some unguarded, unscripted, back-and-forth banter. But punch drunk? Does that imply that the president's brain has been adversely affected by all the hits he's taken, or that he's simply acting drunk? Did Steve Croft mean to suggest that the President of the United States was out of it?" The conservative websites are going to town with punch drunk. Their other favorite talking point had been that he was too serious in his demeanor and was scaring the public about the economic realities facing the nation. Yeah, right. The president offers too much doom and gloom, and now he's laughing too much about it too. By the way, Christine winds up, any pugilistic opponent who believes that line, "Is he punch drunk?" will be in for some nasty surprises. The president is not done fighting for his budget and for his country's recovery. A BuzzFlash FPL.com. News analysis. Yeah, I missed that, and thanks to Christine Bowman for pointing it out. No, I cannot imagine. Can you? Some reporter saying to somebody who may have been literally drunk, are you punch drunk? But to say to Barack Obama, why is it? Because he's young? Steve Croft is old? Is it okay to ask a young black man sitting in front of an old white man, is it okay for the old white man to say, are you punch drunk? I'm surprised that Croft didn't say, again, I didn't hear it, but I'm surprised that Steve Croft didn't say, yo, are you punch drunk? Pretty incredible. I think we have time. We have time to take a call. Diane is calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening via the Internet. Diane, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks a lot. I wanted to talk about your last subject that you talked about Israel.
Yes.
And I'm Jewish, and I'm not just Jewish by race. I really love my religion, and I totally agree with the cartoon. And my feeling is that I have this 6,000-year-old religion that I love. It gives me a lot of solace. I know you're not a big one on religions, but I'm not going to let this 60-year-old country ruin my wonderful 6,000-year-old religion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not going to let it happen. I don't know how to stop it, but I just think it's karma. You say, how dare you have let the Nazis kill us long enough? Whatever rules the universe is going to say, oh, okay, well, we'll just see what you do when you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening.
Well, that's the heartbreaking part to me. I've said many times in this program, I have friends here in Atlanta who are of the Jewish faith. I have friends who are Palestinian. I have friends who are Muslims. So many of us party together. We do each other's religious, I have a Christmas party here at my house. I don't follow Christianity by any means, but I have Christians, Jews, Muslims, atheists come here. We drink, we have a good time. There are times when we sit around and discuss the intricacies of religion. There is not an anti-religious thought in my head, except when it becomes an instrument of torture or an instrument of pain, like so much of Christianity has become, like so much of Islam has become. And then when you see, or when one sees, a nation founded as a religious nation, and which is the way Israel was founded, and understanding the history, and I'm referring to the 6,000-year history you're talking about, and also understanding the immediate history, the past 80-year history, and then seeing what's going on, I hate to be over dramatic here, but it is heartbreaking. It is so saddening. You could not have found in this country back in 1967 a bigger cheerleader for what happened in the Six-Day War than Mike Malloy. Now, granted, my attitudes and views modified as I became more aware of how the State of Israel was formed, what was involved, yada, 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 but to see this going on is just heartbreaking. Listen, I'm glad you called. Diane, I got a break. Thanks, okay?
Yeah, and I would insist that you're a friend of the Jews for bringing this up.
Well, I appreciate that. You don't know how much. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
All right, take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Don't you dare go away. It's about 7 past the hour. We have one open line here. Please fill it up because I get nervous. I think, oh, my God, we're down to 32 listeners. What happened to number 33 and number 34? Anyway, the number here is 877-99-MALLOY. Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com writes, regarding the fish that I mentioned earlier, loaded up fish, freshwater fish, in America, in five areas where they took fish and tested to see what was in the little creatures' bodies, and found five or six different pharmaceuticals, not to mention other stuff. Bob writes, Mike, here in the Appalachians, remember Bob is in West Virginia, here in the Appalachians, way upstream from most folks, we've got our own fish issues. Remember the opening of The Simpsons? Remember the three-eyed fish swimming near Homer's nuke plant? We don't have nuke plants here in West Virginia, but we do have three-eyed fish now, thanks to the coal industry. Selenium from their blasting sites, among a whole panoply of poisons, has created them, as well as fish with crooked spines, transsexual fish, and every deviant, better living through chemistry nightmare in between. Pretty sad when we're outrunning animated satires of our own lives. Bob. Different Bob. There's Bob Kincaid in West Virginia and Bob Alexander in Seattle, and bless them both. Three-eyed fish.
The better to see you with, my dear.
All right, back to phone calls here. Who do we have? Greg is calling from Bisbee, Arizona, listening on XM. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Mike. I hope I know what to say here. Lot going on, and I guess just to start off with, like I talked to, I guess, Kathy, the screener, we're not only in an economic crisis, we're in a crisis of values and identity.
Uh-huh.
And this whole thing about identity is how we define ourselves. And just, and I'm a little nervous. So
that's all right. Take your time. Take your time. No big deal. Take your time.
But anyways, it's how we identify ourselves. And like that previous caller, the Jewish lady called in, you know, I've been identifying or defining that whole culture as the Bible culture, the Judeo-Christian culture that identifies himself with an external identity from a book.
Well, they're not the only ones that do that.
No, that's true. That's true. But I think that's something to identify in the whole Bible culture and to identify it as that. You know, religions and governments really serve similar purposes, and their purpose is to control. And when I think of it, I think the whole mythology of Moses was that he was raised in the royal household of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So he really, you know, it's an assumption, but wouldn't he know the workings of those hierarchies of government, how to control people with symbols and images
I think he would understand the workings of the Egyptian royal family or the Egyptian household in much the same way as Black Americans understand white people to a degree that white people will never understand Blacks, and the reason being that Moses, like Black folk, had to do all the dirty work. Moses in the Pharaoh's house, Black folk in white people's houses. I'm not sure what you mean.
But he was raised as a member of the royal household. He didn't have to clean anything, is my understanding.
But he wasn't of the royal household.
He was
Egyptian.
He was accepted by. Well, and this is mythology. Here's the point, though, that he knew the power of symbols and images and stories and narratives.
Yeah.
And the medium has changed. They used to use sides of obelisks, and they used to use sides of buildings in Rome and Egypt and all these places to present the description of who people are, identities of who, you know, national identities, religious identities, and these are control mechanisms.
Okay, now wait, let me ask you, Greg. You're starting to get far afield here, and I'm not. Maybe because you're a little bit nervous. Where are you going with this? What I'm saying is, what's the point? Tie it all together for me here.
Well, I don't know if I could tie it all together tonight, you know, in one little 2-minute conversation. I think, but the point I'm trying to make is the whole power of defining and identifying with symbols, and which is words, and identifying with external sources is a way that people can be controlled. Here, this might be a good example. Whenever you can convince somebody they're a sinner, you got them.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, I not necessarily. External symbols. I mean, you just get inside somebody's head when they're young enough. Who was it? Was it Cardinal Richelieu? Somebody who said, "Give me a child till he's 5 or 6, and I'll give you a Catholic for life." I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm not sure where you're going with it, but thanks, Greg. I appreciate you checking in. Maybe we can pick that up again some other time, because I literally am not sure where you were going with that national identity. If you mean the United States, I think our identity has—if you were going in this direction—our identity has been totally poisoned and perverted by the Bush administration, and by the Clinton administration, and by the previous 8, 10, 12—I don't know—going back to about 1898. You know, we had the American century, and that was the century that we established our image, our identity, and that was a warmonger, a society that had zero respect for other cultures, a society that didn't give a goddamn about the sovereignty of other nations. If there was something inside those countries we wanted, we sent in the Marines and took it. So as far as symbolism, I think a lot of people around the earth see the American eagle as more like a vulture, or some kind of a vulture's a carrion eater. I guess the eagle is a good one. It's a killer, an absolute killer. But I think our image has been solidified during the so-called American century. That's why people like William Crystal and the rest of these filthy swine came up with project for a new American century. They want to continue. They want the image to become even more intensely negative, more intensely warlike and destructive. To what ends? I don't know. I don't know what people at PNAC or its successor organization now. What the? Do they not see a point of diminishing returns? How many nations can you attack? How much war and murder and killing can you bring about on this sad, tired old planet before you reach a point where there is just a huge convulsion and you know, somebody somewhere says, you know, I've had enough of this goddamn United States, and somehow, some way, drops 8, 6, 15, 20 nuclear bombs on us, not pretend ones like Saddam Hussein, but real ones. And just, you know, I don't know anymore. I really don't. But as far as symbolism or imagery, we have kind of very carefully pointed a gun between our own eyes and pulled the trigger. We are international terrorists, and I think the rest of the world knows this. The only people who ask the Vietnamese, ask the Dominicans, ask the Salvadorans, pick a country, ask the Serbians, ask anyone you want to ask. Ask the Palestinians, ask the Iraqis, the Iranians, Jesus Christ, the list goes on. Ask the Filipinos. Who do you want to ask about the imagery of the United States? Pick one. Ask.
Thank you.
more Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Hey, little sister, what have you done? Hey, little sister, who's the only one? Hey, little sister, who's the Superman? Hey, little sister, who's the one you want? Hey, little sister,
it is 22 past the hour. RV is calling from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. See, they don't even speak our language. Hey, RV.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Oh, just great. I have a few points here. You were talking about eagles before, eh? Well, did you know the bald eagle steals most of its food, eh, from other birds?
I thought they caught fish.
Yeah, an osprey will dive down and take a fish, right?
Yeah.
Start flying back towards its nest to feed the young. And a bald eagle will come and harass it, make it drop the fish, and they'll steal it.
Must be Republicans.
Well, that's the American way, isn't it? And they also are not above eating dead things, by the way.
Oh, really?
Especially. I've seen them on the side of the road up here. I'm just working away on a dead deer, so. Another point I wanted to make, there are some good Republicans. Ron Paul, for one. You know, I mean.
Well, he's not really a Republican, is he?
Not really, but he is a member of the Republican Party. And although the mainstream media didn't show it, when he was at that Republican convention that Rush Limbaugh supposedly took over, he got the most applause and the most respect when he was talked about how the war was illegal and wrong and how we should never be there and the Federal Reserve System is killing us. But they didn't show that on the mainstream media much.
Right, right. No,
and,
not.
And, you know, and the Republican followers, let's just face it, a lot of them have good intentions and believe the propaganda that's fed them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I meant earlier. To be a good Republican, you don't have to do anything. Just sit there and listen and do as you're told.
But they can be woken up, too. Anybody can once they learn the truth.
You think?
And there's also the fact that you were talking about how America was formed. I remember a very famous quote by Thomas Jefferson. This was after I think Henry Harrison, the governor of Ohio, had cleaned out all the Indians from his territory and used that victory to, you know, get elected president of the United States. You know, mm-hmm. Sort of like how Caesar goes off to Gaul and kills a bunch of Celts and comes back and is
right.
paid for it and becomes emperor.
Yeah, but look what happened. But look what happened to Caesar.
Yeah, well, exactly. Thomas Jefferson said in his memoirs that when he realizes that God is just, he trembles for his country.
Yeah, says, yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and if you got my podcast, you got to watch it there.
If what now?
I sent you a link to my podcast, me and Tinfoil Hat Lady's newest endeavor to try to help spread the truth.
You did? When did you send it?
I sent it to you and Kathy. Kathy knows about it. You guys can maybe watch it later.
Oh, okay. She's not.
Part one and part two. Reflect on it. Don't, you know.
Okay. All right.
And one more thing before I close, I wanted to talk about Mr. Obama. I think he's being Carterized. Remember, Jimmy Carter had all these great ideas when
mm-hmm.
he first came in that he was going to,
right.
you know, how he got elected because he realized the drug war was failing and he was going to legalize, you know, marijuana and go at it as a social and health issue, remember?
Right.
There was all this hope for when Jimmy Carter came in that finally things were going to change.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't take them long before the establishment turned on him and made him into a laughingstock. And that is what I think is happening to Obama. He's being set up.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. Every time Obama turns around, and of course he's making himself very, 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 very vulnerable by being out there constantly. I think it's wonderful that we have a president who is trying to act like a prime minister, but on the other hand, given the rapacious nature of media in this country. Given the idiocy of media in this country, with almost entirely, there are a few exceptions, as I try to point out, but given the idiocy and the rapacious nature of media in this country, they're gunning for him. They first of all, they don't like him on a number of reasons, because he's young, he's bright, he's intelligent, he also happens to be a person of color. So this is a challenge to all these young white boys out there and white girls who are trying to make their mark as being, you know, real journalists, when in fact what they're trying to do is just, and they're succeeding, is just being complete jackasses. So, yeah, they're gunning for him. You're right. I hope he understands that, and I think he probably does. You know, Obama is doing some policy things that I think are horrifying. And I'm really, you know, freaking out about all this. But on the other hand, where it concerns whether or not this media is going to roll him, I don't think so. I think they're messing with the wrong guy. If these young reporters and television people think that they're going to get over on Barack Obama, I just don't think it's going to happen. You understand?
There's definitely a backlash possibility that the more they go after him, you know, of course, the more his own people will protect him.
Well,
it makes them look bad.
Yeah, it makes them look bad because it makes them look like what they really are. So many of these reporters and people that work for the networks and even the people who write for some of the dying newspapers in this country don't know the half of it. They're in way over their heads to begin with. RB, I got to leave it there. Thanks, man. All right. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Twenty-five before the hour, the Malloy program is where you are, tuned in. Matt is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. So good to talk to you. You know, that letter from Bob, or a moment with Bob.
Uh-huh.
When he brought up that statistic, about 79% of American people disagreed with the Lieutenant Calley decision.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember the shock and awe that I felt.
I had forgotten, and I remind my friends and people I'm a little bit older. In 1972, McGovern got crushed by Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
During the Vietnam War, and this is what I wanted to. There's so many things I wanted to say, but you are the one who said this country loves blood and death and war and fighting, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
Let's see. 1984, you reading that was the greatest thing ever, and keep swearing. I'll never forget the time I was driving home late at night. I'd never heard you before, and I heard you come. I don't want to say it because I'll probably get bleeped off the air, but I thought, who is this? This is incredible.
Yeah, when's this guy going to lose his broadcast license?
Yeah, he's not going to be around much.
No, not.
Yeah.
No, I understand. The Lieutenant Calley story, I lived here in Georgia when he was, he eventually wound up working in or owning a jewelry store in Albany, Georgia. And like so many people in that generation, so many men, he got fat, extremely fat, and bald, and kind of gimpy. He's dead now. I think he died of a heart attack. But I can remember feeling the outrage that 79% of Americans thought the verdict was wrong, that he should have been allowed to go free. And let's not forget the guy over him, Captain Medina. Lieutenant Calley tried to cop a plea and more or less and say, look, I was only following orders from Captain Medina. And I forget Medina's first name, but it didn't wash and he was found guilty. But
was that true? Was he?
He was following orders, but that's not an excuse. That's not a reason to be found not guilty of murdering, ordering the murder of 500 civilians in a ditch. There were also heroes in that story. The American helicopter pilots who saw what was going on and went down. You know, that death toll could have been 1,000, 1,500. They were just running them in, just like the Nazis did to the Jews, just run them into ditches and execute them. And there was at least one, there might have been two, American helicopter pilots who saw what was going on the ground, brought their ships down and got between the Americans firing at the civilians and the civilians themselves, and non-com people got out of that helicopter and said to Callie that he'd better stop, and they got out with, the way I read or heard the story, they got out with their sidearms drawn. They were ready to shoot in order to protect these children and women who were being butchered by William Callie and his crew of crazy people. So there are so many stories about what happened at Pinkville or My Lai back in on that horrible day. And another sidebar to the story, one of the officers, I think he was a colonel at the time, who was told to investigate this, because until Seymour Hersh revealed it, the American public didn't know anything about it. But soldiers who were out there did know. They knew about it. They knew what was going on. And My Lai was not unique. There were many instances of that, but a colonel or a major, either a major or a colonel, probably a major at the time, who was told to investigate and slow walked the whole investigation, tried to cover it up, was Colin Powell.
That was coming to mind.
Not necessarily a cover-up, and he certainly wasn't near where it occurred, if we're to believe the history, but his function was to make sure that the story didn't get out by slow-walking the investigation, by keeping everything as quiet as possible, and by feeding to the military press corps and the civilian press corps that would gather for these 5 o'clock follies every day. A bunch of BS. So that was our esteemed chairman of the Joint Chiefs and eventually Secretary of State, Colin Powell, who was involved in that in that manner. So it's a hideous chapter, but only a chapter. You know, a lot of people wonder why they hate us, as Bush so infamously said. Why do they hate us? They hate us because we buy houses. No.
They hate us for our freedom, right?
Well, yeah, they hate us for our freedom, right. They hate us for all those reasons, not because we round up, you know, entire villages of people and execute them, not because we invade countries with no provocation, not because we steal other people's resources, not because we send in the Marines to make sure that we get bananas at a low rate. No, 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 no. They hate us because we love freedom. Jesus Christ Almighty. This country would have a major, massive breakdown, Matt, if we could ever accept what we really, truly have done in the past 100 years. The average American could not handle it.
They wouldn't believe it. They couldn't wrap their minds around it, which is why, if the 9/11. It's
right.
Warrant Officer Hugh Thompson. I'm Googling this thing. He was the helicopter pilot.
Oh, was he? Okay.
He intervened, got in the way, put his helicopter in between. That was
brilliant. Yeah, and for some reason, he was in the news recently. Was it because he died or he got recognized for what he did?
I think he got recognized about 3-4 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. I say recently, but I guess it was 3-4 years ago. So, all right. Well, listen, thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
We're strong here in Minnesota for you. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. When is Al Franken going to take his Senate seat? Does anybody know from Minnesota? Jesus. Eleanor is calling from Albuquerque, listening via the Internet. Hey, Eleanor.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Hello from the land of enchantment.
It is, definitely, isn't it?
I can hardly hear you, but I hope you can hear me.
I hear you just fine. I'm sorry for the screw-ups in our audio system. Jesus, we got to get this worked out. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, barely, but I'll go on with what I have to say here.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Barack Obama's. I contributed a lot to his campaign, and I think our president is brilliant, you know. And I saw that that interview with Steve Cross and Barack Obama on Sunday with Sunday was 60 Minutes.
Right.
And it really didn't come off the way you're reporting it, because I think you were reading somebody's blog on it, you know. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes that's why it's important to see something instead of read about it, because in my mind, you know, it was funny because Steve Cross and Barack Obama have a good relationship, because I remember he did the interview with him and Michelle right after after the election, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so they built up quite a good relationship. I could tell. I think so, you know. And when he mentioned this, we'll see Barack Obama was talking about, Jesus, if you had told me a year ago that Iraq would have been the least of my problems. Of course, it's a big problem, he says, but it's the least of my problems. And then he went on to say, and then, you know, nobody wants to bail out the auto companies. And he had this big, huge smile on his face, you know.
Mm.
And I thought, well, gee, you know, you could just see Steve Cross saying, oh, you know, I'm going to have to say something about this, you know. And that, and his words were the same words that I was thinking. Look at Barack, he's there, you know, saying, my God, would you believe this, you know. No, I thought, gee, he looked like he's punch drunk, you know. And, of course, Barack responds to, well, no, he says, when he tells him that, then Barack responds saying, well, no, you got to have a bit of gallows humor about this.
Well, I, you know.
He's so smart at answering them, you know.
Yeah. I agree with you, Eleanor, that context is everything. By the same,
it does sound bad, yeah, does it?
Yeah, by the same token, to you know, when you think about the last 8 years with Bush,
I know.
Can you imagine anybody anywhere saying to him, "Have you fallen off the wagon again?"
But I think the two, these two, have a pretty good relationship, and I just love what Barack Obama said to Ed Henry. Now, Ed Henry was really terrible. Did you see the press?
Oh yeah, now that I saw.
I love that.
I did too.
You can see Barack going in for the kill there, you know, grinning.
But that's exactly what I mean. These young white boys who think they're
on and on and on about, oh, well, how come you didn't answer? You only took 2 days of this, Barack Obama. You could just see him going in for the kill, saying, well, you know, I'd like to know what I'm talking about before I.
Yeah, unlike young Mr. Ed Henry. Hey, listen, thanks for checking in, Eleanor. I'm sorry that you're having trouble hearing us. We're, like I said, we are still working on getting the bugs out of the system. The situation here that we have now, of course, is we don't have, you know, there's nobody we can complain to. You know, we can't call the home office and say, hey, fix this, God damn it, people can't hear us. We can't do that anymore. We have to fix it ourselves. So we are working on these bugs, trying to squash them. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Yeah, everybody was here tonight. Our engineer and executive producer, Kathy Bay. Our technical advisor, Ben Birch. Military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Economic correspondent, Bruce Enberg. And our ethical advisors, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Everybody was present and accounted for tonight. Bill is calling from Ignacio. How do you say it, Bill? Colorado. Hey.
Ignacio,
listening on XM. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Mike. It's good to talk to you. I love the show. I'm glad somebody's talking about a little bit of rage out there.
Well, thanks for tuning in.
Hey, I've been reading up on this whole Federal Reserve central banking scam that's been worked over for the last 400 years.
Yeah.
This is my thing, and I have no, you know, facts, just a hunch, You know, they sucked China in with all this bad debt. And that's the one place in the world that they haven't controlled with their banking yet. And like you were talking earlier, these guys want to have a war with these guys.
Right. That's yeah. Well, they want more than a war. They, I think they're just interested in the murder and the mayhem and the blood and the gore. There's something wrong with these people. There's something mentally unbalanced. There is something wrong with them.
But have you ever heard of that guy David Icke?
David Icke?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
David Icke.
Oh, David Icke. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's I say Icke. I guess it is Icke. Well, I read a book that he wrote back in 97, and I read it back then.
Uh-huh.
And he laid all, it's kind of weird, he laid it all out.
Mm-hmm.
He said Bush should be president as soon as he gets president. He's going into Iraq, and he's kind of into some ancient stuff, you know, like, you know, that's Babylon and ancient secrets over there that they want to take over. And then this thing, this Atlantis Rising ceremony that they just did in Dubai back mm-hmm. in February.
Right.
Did you see that thing?
No, I tend to stay away from stuff like that. It causes me to have massive flashbacks.
It gets your back, your neck hairs going up.
Yeah, I have to be careful with what, you know, what I expose myself to, so to speak, Bill. You know, there's too much debris in my past, and if I start watching something like Atlantis Rising Festival in Dubai, I'm liable to lose it completely and start seeing those damn huge cockroaches again, you know, and I just can't take that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right on.
All right, Bill, listen, I got to leave it there, pal. Listen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, I don't ever want to reach for a doorknob and see it turn into a fountain of blood. I mean, you know. And so I have to stay away from certain images. Marge is calling from Maryville, Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Good evening, Michael. How goes the race?
I think I'm losing.
Jeez, so
peepy. How are you?
Not bad for an old lady. How are you keeping up?
With?
Just keeping up, keeping up.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Keeping up enough to see that on my old radio station, WLS, they had Rod Blagojevich.
Yeah, they sure did.
Sitting in on the morning, hosting the morning. What's up with that? What's going on, Marge? What's happening in Chicago?
I hate to tell you, but I didn't tune in. I just saw pictures of him with the headphones on, shaking his finger at somebody.
Oh, yeah? Which finger?
Well, the index finger.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he was behaving, at least on camera.
Well, that's good. That's good.
That's not why I called. But have you ever heard of a fellow called Gil Gross?
Gil Gross, isn't he a radio person?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard
he's
his name.
He's taken the time slot that once belonged to Paul Harvey on WGN at noon on Saturday.
Okay.
And this past Saturday, he works for ABC Radio Network. And I've been trying to find out how I could get a copy of his broadcast from last Saturday. That would be the 21st. He was talking about the media and journalism.
Yeah.
And how it's changed. And I thought, holy crap. It sort of sounds like something Mike might say.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
On WGN?
Believe it or not.
That sounds almost impossible.
Well, you know, times they are changing. But I don't know how to find it. All I know is that, like I said, so far, it's ABC Radio Network. He's out of San Francisco, I found.
Well, WGN, I mean, WLS is ABC.
Yeah, I know. But they have bought...
I gotcha.
...the programming for Paul Harvey.
Well, here's a weird idea. Why don't you call WGN and ask them?
If I get past the damn phone mail, I would.
I've
tried several times.
Oh.
I've got his address in San Francisco. I think I may just sit down and do snail mail.
Okay.
But what I was calling about, have you been in touch with our friend Nancy Skinner?
We talked to her on several occasions. I haven't talked for the past 3 or 4 days, but
there's something coming about now, and I don't know what stage it's in, called the Food Safety Act of 2009.
Food Safety Act.
It's something that her passion about Frankenfood, it's House H.R. 875.
Yeah.
And one of the things in there, they're addressing the needs of immune-compromised consumers.
Right.
And guess who they're putting in charge of setting up the labs that's going to test the food?
Not Skinner and not you. Who?
Does the name Monsanto ring a bell?
Who?
Monsanto.
Ah! You're kidding me.
Would I lie to you?
No, you wouldn't. That's just too freaky. And you know what else? Hey, you know what else?
What else?
We've got 10 seconds left in the program tonight.
Did you know what Michelle found when she was digging up her garden at the White House?
What?
Two hunting buddies from Cheney.
Marge, I got to go. Thank
take
you.
Care.
All right, take care of your own self. Two of Cheney's hunting buddies, huh? Thanks for hanging out tonight. If you were listening online and had some problems with the internet stream, well, you know, this is liberal talk radio. That's what you have to put up with, I guess. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Be here. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.